The Weekly Long Box is brought to you this week by Handy Holder. Do you have a tablet device? What if you were to accidentally drop it on the floor and break it? With Handy Holder, you would never have to worry about that again. Visit hand, the letter E, holder.com to learn more about the world's best universal tablet holder.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 32 of the Weekly Long Box. I'm Todd, as always, along with Leonard. How are you doing today, Leonard?
I'm doing all right, and just like you are always Todd, I am always Leonard. I never get a day off.
No, you don't. Who'd want to be somebody else than Leonard? I wouldn't.
Oh, well, it's quite the short list of people that want to be in my shoes, trust me. It's very difficult explaining your name to the Canadian border fellas and ladies. I don't want to discriminate there. You know, in my travels to and from Canada this past weekend, we had wrestling for Chikara in Strathroy, London, Ontario, and then in a sweatbox in Syracuse, New York, which I think has the most strip clubs I've ever seen on one block. There were three on one block. Two of them were right next to each other. One was directly across the street.
Well, that's like an endurance run for you, though, isn't it? Make sure you get to them all.
Well, you know, it was a busy weekend, so I didn't get a chance to partake. I think those days have come and gone for me, you know, in my old age.
Oh, well, I hope you can keep up next time you go. But we got a lot of news to talk about this week. One of the Marvel books going bi-weekly with a big creator. We Ooh. Also have a DC team book maybe becoming a movie. And
oh.
I'm going to talk a little bit about the Scranton Con that I went to this weekend.
Yes, I was very upset about that. I wanted to go, but of course I was out of town. And it's only on Sunday. They only do it as one day. Soon the Scranton Con will be the Mega Con.
I think it's going to be the East Coast Con someday. It's going to be huge. And I figured this would have been the con you could have took Little Man to for the first one. Just as, you know, a rough, you know, a dry run.
Right.
But you weren't around, and that made me sad, too. A lot of people were asking for you.
Yes. And he was just saying before he wanted to puke on a box of dollar issues.
Oh, there was not many of them, so you're gonna have to like work your way through. But we're also gonna talk about what we read last week. Me and Leonard have a lot of crossover. I know you read Saga and Daredevil. I also did, and I have a lot of independent books to talk about this week. I'm all independent.
That's right. Todd is making me look foolish with the number of big two books that I read. But Saga, you know, hey, Saga's an indie book. We're also going to talk about the book that we're most looking forward to this week. And mine is a twofer. It's one I already own, if you will. And, you know, it's an indie book, but it's something everybody should go to their store today and check out if you already have not.
Hmm. And we're also going to talk about the question of the last week, which was, what creator, living or dead, have you never met that you would like to? And this one was tough for me. Very tough.
You know what? It was tough for me as well, only because, you know, you and I have gotten out and we got to, you know, Baltimore, like, checked off, like, five people off my bucket list.
I was talking with Dave yesterday about it, and we went down. Someday I have to make the list of the sheer amount of creators that I've met. It's ridiculous. Like, the big names. Oh, so this one was very tough.
I have pictures of myself with a bunch of them. I think I need to put them up on my Facebook page. I've been slacking with my Facebook page. Twitter is much more fun than the Facebook, if you ask me.
I like Twitter, too, just to get, like, random thoughts out there. Facebook is, like, a more personable site for me. It's, like, more family and close friends than just anybody, you know?
Well, you're a public figure now. You have to start letting the people in.
I don't know. I'm a shadowy cabinet kind of person. I don't like people looking into my life.
Right, then they'll see you're part of the Illuminati, and then it'll just snowball from there.
Yeah, spelled N-A-U-G-H-T-Y, Illuminati.
Oh, goodness. Why does that movie not exist? Like, some sort of, like, screwball comedy about the end of the world and, like, you know, the young punks versus the nerds or something.
No, the young punks versus the New World Order rich kids who are controlling everything from behind the scenes. That would be fantastic.
Oh, goodness. Well, all of our good ideas have been shot. This was not a good idea, that Illuminati film.
Go ahead, Troy.
No, I was going to say, where would you like to start with the news, my good man? We got a lot to cover this week.
Let's start with the DC movie news.
Yes, and I like the way that Todd phrased that at the beginning. You know, for those of you just tuning in who usually download a podcast and just start it arbitrarily like 7 to 10 minutes in, we'll have no idea what we're talking about, which is everyone. That's how everyone listens to podcasts. But there's a Metal Men movie in the works.
It's not a Justice League movie?
No, a Metal Men movie of all things. And isn't Barry Sonnenfeld, the guy who did like the Men in Black movies, among other things, but most recently the Men in Black movies, he is attached to be involved. And I am intrigued by a Metal Men movie.
I actually want to see a Metal Men movie. It's one of those weird properties that's not like that even in comic book circles isn't really well known. Like if I asked you name a Metal Men villain, would you be able to come up with one off the top of your head?
I'm sure if I said Doctor or Professor so-and-so, that would probably be one.
That would probably be a good one. But it's a lesser-known property. If you didn't put the DC logo in front of the trailer, people probably wouldn't even know it was a comic book movie. They just think it's some sci-fi thing. It's about, you know, these different robots that a doctor creates, and they're all different metals, and the personalities are based on the metal. Like the gold thinks he's, you know, high on himself, and the tin is very scared and timid. And I'm like, I just think this could work, you know, as a summer sci-fi movie. I just think it's a fun little idea. And if they do the Keith Giffen and DeMatteis and McGuire one, I'd like that even better.
I was actually going to say, that's one of the few Metal Men stories that I've read outside of their scattered appearances. Didn't they have a little bit of an appearance in 52, the weekly comic from many moons ago?
Yes, they did. One of my favorite covers.
Yes.
Where they have, I think, the professor, the Dr. Magnus, who created them, shooting them out of the gun.
Mm-hmm.
They're all little bullets. But, yeah. And they were in the weekly, the newspaper strip.
That's right, the Dan DiDio scripted story, yes.
Yes, and I actually really liked that one, too. That was one of the few Dan DiDio stories that I enjoyed.
Not a big Outsiders fan?
No, I wasn't a big Outsiders fan. But maybe if I read OMAC, I would have enjoyed it more.
Yeah, you wouldn't. I read the first three issues, and like the first two issues were good, but the third issue I just really, really did not like. I know other people love it, and, you know, they're wrong.
I know I heard my head would explode if I read what they did to Maxwell Lord, so I stay away from it.
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, moving along from the Metal Men, there's a bunch of other news that we have to cover, of course, here as well. I know this is what Todd thought was the biggest news of the week, but to me, the biggest news of the week came out over the weekend, and that is that Ed Brubaker is sadly leaving Captain America. He has been on the book for 8 years now, and come October, which is that looming date that we've talked about quite a bit on the book on the podcast here, for a lot of those Marvel titles, a lot of creators are leaving the books that they've been on for quite some time. Brubaker is leaving Cap into the capable hands of Cullen Bunn, who is currently writing, among other things, at Marvel Venom. He is also writing the Captain America and ... book. This week is Captain America and Iron Man with some Barry Kitson art that I'm looking forward to. But Cullen Bunn is mostly known for The Sixth Gun. He is going to co-write some stuff with Brubaker, and then Brubaker is getting the last issue. He is sticking around for Winter Soldier, and I will be sad to see Brubaker go.
I will be sad to see Brubaker go on Captain America also. We were talking, I think I read in this article, they were saying he was on it a couple of years, and I don't know if they were saying 4 or 5. It feels like it's been longer than that. It feels like it's been 7 or 8.
Yeah, it was 8 years that he's been on that book.
8 years? I don't know. Okay, I must have read it wrong. But it's been one of the finest runs of comics that I've been reading in a long time. You know, Brubaker, I'm a big fan. Sorry to see him go. Do we know who's taking over, you said?
As it looks so far, it looks like it's probably going to be Cullen Bunn.
Mm-hmm. And I know you've talked about him. You like him, right?
Yes, I do. Very much so. I picked up his current arc that he's doing on Venom, which is co-written by Rick Remender, because Cullen Bunn is taking over that book in August. Cullen Bunn is still kind of sort of slated to be taking over Wolverine once this upcoming storyline is done with Jeff Loeb. But that could change. It looks like Frank Cho might be taking that book over, which means that book will never see the light of day. I like Frank Cho, but writing and art on that book, he better start now for a book that's going to come out in October, and then, you know, we'll get one issue, and then we'll be done. But yes, Cullen Bunn is one of those guys that's, like, being tapped to take over a bunch of things at Marvel, and I say good stuff.
As we were actually talking about him the other day, too, and I have no idea who he is because I've never really read anything he's done. So I'm thinking about picking up the Captain America Iron Man book just to try it, to get an idea, because I have no opinion. I'm not against him taking over the book. If I haven't read anything from him, though, I have no idea how good he is. So I'm hoping, you know, like, this storyline will be good and I'll be all for, you know, a Cullen Bunn Captain America book.
Right, and as mentioned, you know, I haven't gotten a chance to read the Venom books just because I've been a little bit behind schedule on my books. I really dug his arc that he just recently did on Wolverine, which was very much helped by the Paul Pelletier art, whereas art sometimes can help a book, sometimes it can hurt a book. I did like his Captain America Hawkeye little three-parter thing that he did, but I thought the art kind of hurt the book a little bit. Even though he was fighting Stegron the Living Dinosaur, or whatever Stegron the Blank Dinosaur is. You know, I think the art hurt the book a little bit.
I know what you mean. Sometimes, I agree with you. Art could make, break, or you could be indifferent on it. It's the whole gambit.
Right, so Ed Brubaker still sticking around for Winter Soldier. How long? Who knows? He's still doing Fatale, of course, at Image. Who knows if he'll be back doing Criminal, but he did say he is hoping to devote more time to creator-owned independent stuff, which I will pick up because it is Ed Brubaker, and I will read anything that he writes.
I'm the same way. Just put his name on it, and I'll probably plop down $2.99 to $3.99.
Yes. Speaking of people who I will read anything they write, it has been speculated that coming soon to the Kickstarter website, which is where a lot of folks are taking their independent projects to. Gail Simone and Jim Calafiore, the creative team for a good chunk, most of the chunk of Secret Six, Todd and I's favorite book, 2 years running, 2010 and 2011, they are going to be teaming up to do a Kickstarter project.
I am into this. This might be the first Kickstarter project that I throw some money down. I've never done one, so. But like you said, Gail Simone, Jim Calafiore, Secret Six. I don't even know what the premise is, to tell you the truth. But
yep,
the two of them, poof, here you go. What is it? And maybe I'll do one of the extra things if they have the tiered stuff that you can get some cool stuff. I might throw down a few shekels for something big.
Right, I can only hope that one of the things that you could award is a copy of the Secret Six Depths, the second trade paperback from Gail Simone's own collection, so I can hoard it and keep it away from everyone else.
That's right, just put it in a little glass case with lights and sirens. Like, the only person who could possibly maybe get it is, like, Indiana Jones.
Yeah, so when the Kickstarter project goes live, if you will, I'm sure we will talk about it right here, and we will talk about how we're going to make our decision of what rewards we're going to get. I've donated to a bunch of Kickstarter projects, and wait a minute, didn't you donate to the Jimmy Pamiotti one, the Retrovirus book?
No, I didn't.
Oh, for shame, Todd.
You're gonna just browbeat me for the rest of the week? Don't do it.
Not for the rest of the week, it's just when I get my copy of it. You know, with the sketch and the signature and the everything else that I did, I'll just taunt you with it.
Don't taunt me. I'll pick one up. I'll see if I can find a way to do it.
I'm sure that they'll be available in some way, shape, or fashion. Yeah, so I did a couple things. You know, I did that. That Sullivan Sluggers that was getting some really good press a couple weeks ago. And then one personally to my heart was a documentary about people who collect VHS horror movies.
That I would watch. Is it on VHS, though?
Well, you can get a VHS copy, but I opted for the DVD copy only because the VCR I have eats videotapes. It does not play them.
Ooh, you're these collectors' worst nightmare.
I certainly am. Believe me, I have a bunch that I will not put anywhere near that machine. And this is even back in the day when VHS tapes would come in, like, those big, ridiculously oversized boxes.
Yes, I remember that.
Even more ridiculous than, like, the Disney boxes.
Yeah, when you'd buy a VHS copy and it'd be, like, $89 for a copy of like, the stupidest movie. You want Dirty Dancing on VHS? It's, like, $123.
I'm kicking myself that I can't remember the name of the book and the movie, and I'm very ashamed of myself. But it's a movie that I'm almost certain only exists on VHS. It's one of those movies, and that's what the documentary is about. And we're off the rails of comic books, folks. I do apologize. But it's a book, or it's a movie from the early 80s, in where Henry Winkler plays a professional wrestler.
Okay. That's like bringing all of your loves together.
Right, right. And I'm trying to look up the name of the movie, because it's like it's such a bad movie, but it's so good. It's one of those, like, so good it's bad type movies.
When I got rid of all my VHS movies, the only one that I kept was a VHS copy of, you know, the movie Monster Dog?
Yes.
With Alice Cooper in it, but his voice is dubbed because they didn't think it was cool enough.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, so it's called The One and Only. It's a period piece that takes place in the 50s, where Henry Winkler plays a gorgeous George-esque wrestler from that era. You know, when the wrestling was like the biggest thing on the Dumont Network, and it takes place then. It's from like actually the late 70s, and that's one of those movies that only exists on VHS, and I have it in like the big crazy box that doesn't fit on any shelf anywhere.
I have a couple of VHS players that that still work really well. I might send one your way so you could watch it at your leisure.
Yeah, there's a lot of things I got to get converted over from VHS to DVD. But I have people that are working on a digital conversion project. And if it goes well, I have literally 100 videotapes to give them to convert over. And they are going to be, I'm going to be forever in debt to them if they can do it for me.
Is these the people at your super secret science job?
No. It's some folks I know through wrestling.
Oh, okay.
But just moving along here, we kind of got off subject talking about Kickstarter here. We talked about Ed Brubaker leaving Cap. With the shakeups on the creative teams that are coming in Marvel this October, we talked last week about some of those changes. Some rumors are coming out now that the X-Men book that Brian Bendis is going to be writing is actually going to be a bi-weekly X-Men book, which kind of makes sense because for a period of time, and I think that time exists currently, where Bendis was writing 3 or 4 different Avengers books, and people would say, why don't we just combine them and make it like a weekly book or a bi-weekly book? And there's rumors that that's what they might be doing with X-Men when Bendis takes that over this October.
I think that's a good idea. He can handle the workload. I mean, granted, I didn't like everything that he did on Avengers. I came and went. I liked his Dark Avengers. But he has the fan base. He gets the sales. I think it would be better to have that one book. I don't know, maybe they look at it sometimes as like we have 2 books in the top 10 instead of having one same title in the top 10 3 times, 4 times a month. I don't know if it's like a sales thing that helps your figures or whatever. That's the only thing that I can think of is why they wouldn't give him a book 2 to 3 times a month.
Right, I'm sure like event before the big Thanos reveal, I'm sure Avengers Assemble would sell a little bit better if it was tied into what he was doing in the 2 other Avengers books that he writes.
Mm-hmm. But I understand what they were doing with the Avengers Assemble. They just wanted to have a team that was the movie, something that you can get into without reading, which I think we've talked about a billion times on here, is I'm all for with a movie, you know, promotion coming out that you want to have a comic that's easily accessible and you don't have to know like 1,000, you know, years of continuity. And that's what they're doing with that. And I applaud that. So I think that's a better idea than having that tied in with the Avengers, especially going into Avengers X-Men.
Right, and we're going to talk about that. We held off talking about Avengers versus X-Men number 5 until number 6 came out. And, you know, at this point, the cat is out of the bag on that one, so we will do our best to keep it spoiler-free. But just kind of finishing up the news here, Todd had mentioned that in Archie Comics, there's going to be a celebrity cameo, and this does happen from time to time. I think Kiss just had a 4-part arc in Archie, and the Kevin Keller book, which features, you know, one of the first lead characters in a book to be openly gay. And who better to guest star in that book than George Takei himself?
I think that's awesome. The only thing that I'm worried about is when you sent me the show notes this week, I saw the cover to the book.
Yes.
And George Takei is in a red shirt.
Takei.
To George Takei. I'm sorry, you know.
Takei means expensive. And if you'd like me to be expensive for you, I will.
That's not bad. I like your...
That's one of George's actual jokes that he would say when people would mispronounce his name.
Really?
Yes, it is.
I didn't know that I was mispronouncing. No offense to Mr. Decay. Oh my. But
you were saying about him being in a red shirt.
Yeah, and I'm worried that he's not going to make it through the comic alive, because we all know what happens to Star Trek red shirts, man.
I'm sure in this all-ages kids book, George Takei will bite the dust. They'll kill him off in this.
Yeah, like some Klingon just shows up in whatever the name of the Archie town is. I forget it off the top of my head. Archie town. Yes.
I think it's called Riverdale.
Riverdale. All I know is Homer was thrown out of there once in The Simpsons. That's the only thing that's how I would remember Riverdale.
I was actually just going to say, when Homer got kicked out, and he goes, stuck up Riverdale punks.
Yeah. And stay out of Riverdale.
Oh, goodness. So, yeah, so I try to get what I can on books, and I applaud Archie for taking a stand and having a book with a lead character who is openly gay. And I am a George Takei fan, and I will pick up this issue, and if it is good, I will probably continue to read that book. So George Takei is getting at least one sale out of me for being in this book.
Hmm. I would probably be that second sale, but it'll probably be sold out at the shop before I get there.
Oh, there you go. Well, I'll make sure you got it. Well, let's see. You don't do a pull list.
No, I don't. I have a super secret way of doing it.
That I don't want to talk about. Super secret science job.
Yeah, I'm trying to steal a lot of your bits for myself. That way I don't have to think.
I do just want to close out the news here real quick with some digital stuff to touch on. I think it came out last week that Comixology released their numbers. And, you know, they didn't say single issues, or they didn't say, well, this book sold more than this. But what they did say was they sold $19 million worth of comics last year. And that is a lot of comics, and that is a lot of money.
Yes, it is. That is a lot of money.
Yes, comics. It is.
Oof. Do you know what kind of percentages that is? Did they mention that in there?
No, I didn't get into it too much. I'm sure that's a lot of their $1.99 and 99 cent books are eating up a lot of that. I didn't really get too much into the breakdowns of the numbers. Mm-hmm. I just think that is a huge number, which is only going to get bigger as years go on.
I agree, too. I just know how you love the numbers, so I thought maybe you would have jumped in, you know, head first. But
no, I told you I gave up on the numbers when... I still read the articles on the numbers, but I gave up on them when I saw how skewed the numbers that Diamond releases are.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Yes. Yeah, that's so they can make things look good and other things look bad. And, you know, we've heard about creators talking about that. But like we said, the digital is the way of the future. And, you know, you're just going to be more sales and more sales. I like to see how that works out with creators, too, and what creators get from that. Because I know I can't think of what the word's called when you get money for what you do.
Residuals.
I wonder if they get anything for the digital stuff. You know?
It'd be interesting. I think I hope that the deal is not set up like those folks from the old TV shows before there was such thing as like a secondary market mm-hmm. of TV shows on DVD. So like all those people make no money from the TV shows from like the 80s and the 70s.
Yeah, like I think like Gilligan's Island, they said, I remember seeing it. It was they got paid for two airings. Because they would run the show first, and then they would repeat it back in the day once, you know, during the summer, and then that was it. And, like, who knew, you know?
And people complain about people cutting bad deals in comic books.
There's bad deals everywhere. Bad deals everywhere.
That's right. So we should completely decry one company for doing it when everybody does it. But, hey, read your contracts, folks.
Uh-oh. You're going to get angry mail.
That's all right. I deserve it. Mm-hmm. I have too many people liking me these days. One last thing in digitals I did want to mention is that the midweek sale that Comixology is having is all of the Image number ones that have come out this year. Everything from Thief of Thieves to Saga to Fatal to Mudman to Mind the Gap and everything in between. I think there's 23 different books. They're all 99 cents each. And if you want to get them all to try out all 23 books, they cut you a deal on that. I think it's $20 if you get all 23, or you could pick and choose. And it's a great place to start. Number one for a book, 99 cents. I think you have until Thursday or midnight, at the end of the day on Thursday there, to pick those up. And folks, Saga for 99 cents, as huge as that number one issue was, you'd be silly not to get it if you haven't been reading Saga.
I totally agree. Saga, one of the best books out there. For 99 cents, and for $2.99, I think, for $3.99, I think it would be worth it. But to get, I love the fact that these companies do that with a big, you know, get a bunch of books and it's even cheaper, so you can get stuff like that together. I'm probably gonna have to start doing on that, at least on stuff that I want to try. And then that way get a 99 center and then go back and if it's good, pick up the rest.
I'm just waiting for them to have that Secret Six sale.
Oh, the day they do that, people are just, the internet's going to explode.
The internet will break in half. That is correct. So a nice segue here from talking about those Image firsts. We're going to talk about some of those books that came out last week that both Todd and I read. And what better book to start off with than Saga?
Mm-hmm.
Saga number 4 came out last week.
Yes, it did. And once again, this book is everything I want and more from it. I have to say the art in it, Fiona Staples. I know we usually talk about writers first here on the show, but Fiona Staples is knocking it out of the park on this. The world that they go to, I think it was Sextillion.
Sextillion, yes.
My mistake. I know the first page, Fiona has a great way of just grabbing you with the first page, and I'll say this issue does it again when we're welcomed to Sextillion by these interesting girls who are going to lead us into this world of debauchery. I love the character, the Will, the freelancer, just everything about this book. Just when you... It's emotional. It's great. It's creepy at times when you see some of the stuff going on at Sextillion.
Oh my!
Oh
yes.
Just crazy stuff going on. And every issue at the end, like he has the ability. I want to read the next one. Like when I was reading Ex Machina, you know, this is what I feel like this is, but you know, in a grand space opera kind of way.
And, you know, just pulling a quote from the book that was one of my favorite things in there, not to, you know, to kind of clean things up a bit. But as my family was about to learn, some monsters are worse than others. And the overarching story in this was just about the string of bad decisions that our male lead character Marco has made over the course of his life. As we're revealed about some of the poor decisions he's made, and I'm sure that these are all going to have repercussions as this book goes on.
Oh, yeah, that little thing that he's mentioning can't possibly come into play anywhere down the line. And I like his logic behind it, too. When the wife's, like, browbeating about it, he's like, didn't we agree to, you know, that we weren't going to talk about this aspects of our lives before we met each other? She's like, and immediately she's like, yes, but this is different. And I'm like, you can't win, man. You can't win. I just think the writing, like, you know, Brian K. Vaughan, just an amazing writer, and he's just knocking it out of the park every time.
So, yeah, Saga number 4, great book. And like I said, if we're not selling you on this, go check out number 1 for 99 cents digitally, and you will not be disappointed. Where would you like to go from here, from books that we read last week?
I'm going to go with one that only I read because I'm going to try and sell you on it. I'm going to go with Merciless 2, The Rise of Ming.
Ooh.
Once again, written by Scott Beatty, art by Ron Adrian. I love this one. It's Ming just knocking down people in each of the realms that his father is ruling. You know, he's a prince at this time. This is the story of his, I guess, rise to power. I don't know how it's going to end. But the thing that I like about it is Ming reminds me of a certain character that you like, and this is all I'm going to sell it. He reminds me of Sinestro.
I was going to say, I'm looking at some of the preview preview pages that I always like to put up with the show notes, if you will. And yes, he does look very Sinestro-esque in this.
And I don't want to say, you know, because they're not ripping him off. The thing with Sinestro, you know, is he was a lawman and he fell, like whether or not, you know, he took over and he was a tyrant. But he still has some redeeming qualities. He wants to save the universe. Whatever he's doing, he thinks he has a good goal. In this is just slight Ming and he's coming after you. There's no redeeming qualities whatsoever in Ming. And he just, like, each realm, he just, you know, you ticked him off, he's going to go and do it. And, like, he's just one of those just ruthless people, like people who help him. They're like, oh, well, we've invented this thing you want to invent, him, and it's going to help you go get revenge on this person. And he's like, okay, just now kill yourself so nobody else has this invention. And I'm like, oh my God, I love this book. It's just the fun of, like, to me, a Dark Avengers or a Secret Six, just sometimes a villain book or Suicide Squad. Sometimes the villain books are more fun than the hero books.
See, for me, while, you know, and I'm looking at the art here in those preview pages, as I mentioned, the fact that it does not look exactly like the Flash Gordon movie makes me very sad.
Does it really?
Yes, that's the only Flash Gordon I know.
That is also pretty much the only Flash Gordon I know, but I just think the art is so beautiful and the story is so good that I don't mind. And, you know, it's younger them, so maybe Voltan, Prince Voltan doesn't look like the Prince Voltan you know later, because he's only in his teens, maybe.
We shall see, but it's definitely a good-looking book, and I could definitely see the Sinestro vibe coming off him.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a good character, so...
Yes, Sinestro is the best character.
I don't know about the best, but we'll talk about that another time.
Yes, sure. Now, I do want to, speaking of characters that you would probably argue as the best character of all time, I want to talk about Daredevil number 14.
Ah, this was, that's a good character.
It certainly is. So, Daredevil, Matt Murdock, finds himself displaced in Latveria. Doom is on the cover, but correct me if I'm wrong, Doom does not appear in this book at all.
Not that I saw. I didn't see him anywhere unless he was hiding behind something.
No. But what happens in this book is they... and again, is that a recurring character in the book, or is that someone just new that Wade whipped up?
I don't know if he's been around in like other like FF books or not, but I don't think he's been in Daredevil yet, if that's what you're asking. But I don't know if he's been in any of the other FF books, like, you know, as a character. I only know a couple of his people that he has around him.
So what they do is they run some sort of experiment on him, and of course a lot of what Mark Waid's strength with the character, if you ask me, is utilizing his explanations of Daredevil's other heightened senses. And what that experiment does to Daredevil, it takes away his other senses. So he's even more flying blind than we've seen before, because he takes away, what, his sense of smell?
Yes, his sense of touch.
Yes. So Daredevil is starting to lose the things that he has relied so much on throughout the course of his career as a superhero. And to say he is in a bad way at the end of this issue, stuck in Latveria, is an understatement.
How heartbreaking was that last page? You're just like, oh, no.
You know what? I knew he wasn't, and again, spoilers, folks, I knew he wasn't making over that fence, but just the look on his face was so sad.
Yes,
he thought he made it over.
And did you happen to notice the cover, what they did? That Matt Murdock as Daredevil is reading the Braille on Doom's mask, the little rivets?
No, I didn't even notice that. That's pretty clever.
If you look up, he has the rivets, and then as they come down, they start to turn into little Braille letters. And he's running his fingers across the under the eye of Doom's mask. And it took me a minute once I saw it. I'm like, why is he rubbing Doom's face? And then I'm like, oh, it's Braille. I thought that was a really cool cover concept.
Oh, that is pretty cool. I like that.
See?
Oh, as I look here, Paulo Rivera did the cover on that, and he is leaving the book for some creator-owned stuff. But I really liked Chris Samnee's interiors. There have been good artists on this Daredevil book since the get-go, and that is a very striking cover.
Yes, it is. And I'm not a big Chris Samnee fan, but I thought he worked well on Daredevil this week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all the praise I'm giving Samnee.
Yes, so I'm going to throw it to you to have you talk about the Shadow number 3, as you had asked.
Yes, my other Dynamite book.
Yes.
It's by Garth Ennis and Aaron Campbell. I don't know much about the Shadow. Everything I know about the Shadow is from the Alec Baldwin movie. But I'm enjoying this. It's Garth Ennis, not in his, you know, like wacky out there boys or crossed. He's reining it in as I thought he would, because, you know, this isn't his character and they're just not going to let him make him, you know, become a psychopath and just gut people on every page. But this has that feel of the old, like, pulp noir, you know, books and movies and stuff like that. And I'm really enjoying it. It's him on a mission before World War II. It hasn't started yet. And just, it's him going after some, you know, stuff that they think they could use for a death ray, which I think is cool. It's just perfect for this type of story. And all the other countries are going after it, and they end up sending the Shadow to do it. And they send a CIA agent with them who the Shadow just doesn't like. And the thing I like about it is he just keeps telling them that he's going to get them involved and then giving them misinformation. So he's always at the wrong place. when the Shadow is doing his stuff. And the thing I like about it is when the Shadow, he's very creepy and he's like doing this whole like hypnotism thing so they can't shoot him. And I don't know how his powers work or his origin, but I hope that we get to that because that's the one thing that I think this book is lacking. But I also like the mystery about it too.
What is the Shadow's powers, if you will?
The Shadow has the ability to see the evil in the hearts of men, so he knows whether or not you're good or bad, like Santa Claus, kind of. And he has the ability, like I said, to hypnotize people, and I know that when they shoot at him, they'll miss him because they think he's where he's not. And I don't know if this is – and I'm not sure if in the past they've ever like really confirmed it, whether or not it's a mystical thing or it's just like – basic hypnotism. And then he has a ring on, a red ruby ring, that when somebody's dying, like he shot somebody through the head, and he'll interrogate them while they're dying. It was like, say you're not going to your reward or your damnation just yet, you have to tell me what you want. And they do, and I'm not sure if he's just getting information out of them before he dies and he's hypnotizing them, or he's actually bringing them back to life and getting information out. But it's just one of those things that I actually like, because I don't know, if you know what I mean.
I do, and that is the most I've heard about the Shadow in some time. I never saw the infamous Alec Baldwin movie. I did play the pinball game that it was based on.
Did you at least win that?
I did. I did really good. I got free games and stuff, and made that loud clicking noise that scared people.
Oh, the pop. I love the pop. Make the pop.
Well, it actually sounds like a really interesting concept, and if there's anyone that can make that interesting concept good, it is Garth Ennis, and I'm glad to hear that he's not doing any sort of his over-the-top stuff. You just can't say it's the Shadow with the preacher vibe. It's like, no, that's not going to work. That's just a dumb idea.
Like I said, it's the Shadow with the pulp vibe that it deserves.
That's awesome. That is awesome. So maybe one of these days I would check those out, but I get a lot of books, and you're trying to trick me on everything. If I'm going to get anything, I'm going to get the one that looks like Sinestro.
Yeah, I figured you would. Since you tricked me on Daredevil Weekly, I figured I have to get you back somehow.
Somehow. So just to kind of, as we're, because again, there's been a lot of books. I know last week was a big week for you, and it was a bigger week for me than I would have liked. We may get into some spoiler talk here in the next two books that we talk about. So, listener beware. We are going to talk about first Avengers vs. X-Men, both number 5 and number 6.
Okay.
Number 5 is more so the spoilery thing, and since it's been a month since that book came out, or thereabouts, I think 3 weeks, I feel safe in talking about this issue.
I do too.
So, essentially what happened in this issue 5, the quick synopsis of it is, the Phoenix Force is coming, everyone thinks it's going to be Hope, and Tony Stark makes this giant cannon to try to destroy the Phoenix, or at least dissipate it. He does, but what happens is the Phoenix Force then possesses 5 of the X-Men, and those 5 X-Men being Cyclops, Emma Frost, Colossus, Namor, and Magic, and now they, imbued with the Phoenix Force power, continue into issue 6, where they are attempting to make the world better, and many people have drawn allusions to such books as The Authority and the first run of Grant Morrison's Justice League with the Hypermen, who came and just tried to fix all the world's problems. And of course, we all know that is not how you get things done. In a comic book, you do not use your superpowers to make grass grow where grass does not grow.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. That makes people happy. I know what you're saying, and as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, the gods among men, and, we're not the heroes aren't going to want that because we have to have our own destiny. And I didn't like the whole idea of them all going into the Phoenix Force going into all the X-Men. I thought it was kind of weird when I read issue 5. But there was something about issue 6 that I liked more. I was almost done with it in issue 5. I don't know if it was the Romita's art finally, because that just seemed like it just kept getting worse and worse to me. But then, we got a fresh take on it. I can't think of the artist off the top of my head right now.
Corpiel
made it look beautiful, and it, finally the tides have turned, because it just felt like for reading it for the first 5 issues, the X-Men were just kept getting their heads handed to them, and it just seemed very one-sided. I didn't know if the whole book was going to go like that. I figured it wasn't, but finally the X-Men like have an advantage, and now the Avengers are on the trying to stop them, even though they're doing good. And I like Beast in it a couple of times, talking about whether we should let let them go or not. I like some of that dialogue. This hasn't been what I thought it was going to be, or as good as I thought it was going to be, but it's not like terrible. I'm still going to just get to the end.
Right. And I'm with you. I like the first two issues. Issues 3 and 4, I didn't dig so much. Actually, issue 2 and 3, I didn't dig so much. 4 was okay. 5 and 6, I've definitely come around on. And actually, this past weekend with everybody at the wrestling show, whether it be the fans or the wrestlers themselves who do read the comic books, the books we talked about the most amongst us all was Avengers X-Men number 6 and Walking Dead number 99, which we will talk about momentarily. But yeah, I think Avengers number 6 is going to be, Avengers vs. X-Men number 6 is going to be a real turning point for the book. And the rumors and speculation coinciding with the talk that we've had over the last couple of weeks about the creative team shakeups, the teaser images that we see coming out that a war is coming, and we're starting to see, you know, Thor's hammer all busted up, or Captain America's shield with a bunch of blood on him. There's been tease of an Ultron war. There's been a tease of all sorts of different things coming. This looks like this is the beginning of whatever that's going to be, especially with what Cyclops says at the end of the book.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree.
And the one joke that I wanted to make was, and this was one that I was kind of workshopping in my own head all week, was that the name of Cyclops' crew, the five of them with the Phoenix Force,
mm-hmm.
they should be called the Phoenix Fox Force 5.
Actually, that's what I was thinking, too.
Because they have the Phoenix Force, mm-hmm. there's five of them, and they're foxy.
That's exactly. A little Pulp Fiction nod in there. You got to respect that. Which you have to tell Davey Jr. to see Pulp Fiction. He's never seen that. And that's our Davey reference for this week.
Oh, my goodness. You know what? I don't want to insult Davey Jr., but there's a certain word that would be associated with the type of person who in 2012 has never seen Pulp Fiction mm-hmm. and nor wants to see Pulp Fiction.
Oh, he wants to see it. It's just, you know, who knows
what's
how
his problem?
What, who knows when he's going to get to it on his list?
Oh,
his list
my goodness.
Of things to see.
Yeah, he has to see every Wes Anderson movie 6 times in a row.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. Enjoy, everyone.
You did it. You said
it. I did it. Yep. So let's close out the books we read from last week with Walking Dead number 99. I'm going to ask you first, what did you think of this issue?
Once again, things are going on that I'm never sure how they're going to turn out. The thing that I like about this book, you know, is always, you never know where it's going. We still have no idea how big the group is that that Rick has to take down. We were joking, it could be 4 people, it could be 10,000. Just by the time we get to the end of this book, you're like, 100 is either going to be the biggest bloodbath ever or the biggest swerve in the history of comics.
Yes, we shall see. This it was not the best book if this was your first Walking Dead book.
No.
A lot of it was dealing with the death of Abraham from last month. Spoilers, it's a book that's a month old. Sorry, folks. He dies on page 2 of issue 98.
Never flip through Walking Dead.
Never flip through Walking Dead. And just a lot of the ramifications, people making decisions, some big decisions, like I said, being made for a lot of the characters, like Glenn. There was some Carl stuff in this issue that was downright chilling.
I think Carl's going to be a problem soon.
Well, I still stand by that this book is Carl's story and not Rick's story. And we've talked about this many a time before.
Yeah, definitely it could be. He's been there from the beginning, just like Rick.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, I think this is Carl's story more than anything. And I do my best to try to avoid the covers. And there's 15 covers, I think, for Walking Dead issue 100. And I think we've already seen covers up to 102. I don't look at covers. I don't read solicit text. I like to be surprised when I read my comic books. And I would not be surprised to see Rick bite it in issue 100.
I wouldn't be surprised either, but would you be surprised if he made it?
No.
See, that's the thing that, like, I'm talking. I know I sounded squirrely at the beginning of my review, but I'm like, I never know. Like, looking back, I'm going to go back a book, like you were talking about, like with Abraham. Abraham got killed last issue, and 4 or 5 issues before that, we saw Abraham walking, talking to somebody. I forget who, because a lot of people. And he's just like, yeah, you know what? Rick's on the edge. He did this. He did that. And I think when the time is right, I'm going to take Rick out, and I'm going to take over this town. And you're like, oh, man, when Abraham, you know, like this whole storyline, they have to defend the hilltop against these invaders – you know, Abraham's going to turn on Rick, and I'm waiting for the Abraham turning on Rick story, and then Abraham's gone. And I'm like, mm-hmm. wait a minute, you spent so much time building that up. So anything that happens, I'll be surprised and not surprised, as stupid as that sounds.
Yes, and that's why Walking Dead is one of the best books out there.
Mm-hmm. Try to predict it, and I'll give you $1 million if you get it right, because you won't. That's not a guarantee, by the way. I don't have $1 million.
So, you know, as it builds toward issue 100, which is coming out in, I think, 3 weeks from today, just in time for San Diego Comic-Con, and I'm putting the plea out there. Todd's channels have run dry, unfortunately, in this.
And they might be back on again. They might be back on again. Oh. I was talking to them at the con, and they said to make up money for going back, they go every year to make up money. They're thinking about hitting the Mattel table to make some money to sell stuff. And if they do, they'll pick me up one, if they can get it.
Yes. So if you are a listener of the show and you want to be in my good graces, and I will make it worth your while in some way, I'm not going to say, hey, just get this for me for free. There is a Tiny Titans five-pack of little, non-articulated figures that come in this real cool school bus-looking box with, like, Deathstroke and a comic on the back that you can get at the Mattel table at San Diego. So if any of our listeners are going to San Diego and they want to be a sweetheart and pick that up for me, I would be in debt to you. Please contact me directly through my Twitter, my Facebook, or many of the other ways that you can contact people on the internets.
An all-points bulletin for Leonard. He needs this. You don't know how yes. he's been talking about it. He just won't shut up. And I want to get it for him because my life will be miserable on this podcast if he doesn't get it.
I love me some Tiny Titans, man.
Hey, I don't blame you because I'm still waiting to see if they announce the Doctor Who exclusive figures. And if they do have them, then boom, I'm having somebody get me them.
Wouldn't they have announced them by now?
I think they might have. I haven't checked in a little while. But I know they always wait up until the last like month to 3 weeks, and I don't know why. They did that every year.
I was going to say we're in that 3 week window right now,
so,
sir.
So I might check while we're doing this. So I'll be off in the ozone for the next 5 minutes. No, I'll check later after the show.
So I make that plea, and I will make that plea every week up until San Diego actually happens. So, Todd, I'm actually going to go first with the books I'm most looking forward to this week.
Okay.
We've mentioned a couple things that are coming out this week. The Captain America versus Iron Man, written by Cullen Bunn with art by Barry Kitson. The beginning of a new Amazing Spider-Man storyline starts this week. But the thing I am most looking forward to would be Fatale Issue 6. Mostly because, as Image is wont to do, not only is Issue 6 the beginning of a new storyline, but the trade of the first 5 issues is out this week as well. So if you have been waiting on Fatale, which is one of the better books that have been put out this year, and we'll talk about stuff like that a little bit later on as well, perhaps, you can go to your store and you can pick up the first 6 issues of Fatale, 5 of them, of course, collected in a trade paperback, and issue number 6, the beginning of a new storyline, for, I think, right around $15-16. If your store is good, they'll probably cut you some sort of deal, because most good stores do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you will not go wrong with checking this book out.
Let me ask you a question, because I'm confused now. Because I was getting Fatale. I thought it was a mini-series, or maybe a maxi-series.
You know what? It's one of those things where, like, you know how kind of, like, Criminal was an ongoing story but wasn't connected? It would just be like, I'm going to tell you a story of 5 issues, then I'm going to take some time off, then I'm going to tell you another 6 issues. But as far as I can tell, Fatale is an ongoing series. It may be like a finite series that he has, like, I have 30 issues of this, 40 issues of this, 50 issues of this. Brubaker hasn't said, but it is most certainly not a mini series.
Okay, I could see, obviously it'll probably be a finite series at some point because it's a creator-owned project. He probably has an ending for it. I was under the assumption it was a mini-series to 6, maybe, or slash a maxi-series, and he was adding issues as he went. But that's why I haven't read it. I thought it was going to be like 6 issues, and I was waiting for all 6 issues. So now you're telling me I should probably read those 5 because that'll be one story?
That is correct.
Oh, good. I know what I'm doing after I get out of here. So I have all 5 sitting next to my bed. But, yeah, I didn't know that. I have not seen that it was a mini or an ongoing anywhere written. So you're a good guy to get information from.
I try my best. That's what I do with my free time. I look stuff up on the internet.
Oh, I should try that.
So what are you most looking forward to picking up at the store this week?
This week is the Star Trek Next Generation Doctor Who Assimilation crossover, number 2. I love the first one so much. I'm looking forward to the second one. And like I said, hopefully this will be tell the story told from the Star Trek side to how we get to the end of issue 1 and the Doctor and Captain Picard meet up. I'm having a blast. The art's beautiful. I still, you know, I'm hoping to pick up a page from this. J.K. Woodward's knocking it, you know, out of the park like everybody else on this, you know, that I've read this week. So I'm looking forward to that.
Now, before we get into the Twitter question from last week and the Twitter question for this upcoming week, I would be remiss, because Todd did mention at the beginning of the show, that he went to the Scranton Comic Book Con this past weekend.
Yes, I did.
And how did that work out for you, sir?
I actually didn't get anything this show due to my own fault because I gave up on having paper lists and I put something on my phone. And a while back, my phone died and I got a loaner and I thought everything transferred over real nice and it didn't. So while I was standing at the show, I had to go through memory and the few numbers that I did remember, only one person had the issues that I need and they were ridiculously sky-high priced on them. So I was like, I'm staying away from you. But all in all, like, there were like some good deals. There was dollar books and there's some people who had, you know, the silver and bronze age at good prices. Tom Payer was the guest at the show this time. They had some other like smaller press people for guests. All in all, it was a good time. One of the cool things that they had is they had somebody selling cupcakes and cookies and stuff and water at the show, which I think is really cool because usually the guy who runs the show has stuff for the creators and the retailers. But, you know, we've been at a couple of places where you had to go and leave if you wanted a drink or something like that. So that was cool. And all the baked goods were really, really good. And that's where a lot of my money went. And I'm sad about that because my pants are tighter after this weekend. But for a fun little con, you know, it's not huge. I wouldn't want anybody to have great expectations on the size of it or anything. It takes up, like, you know, a small, you know, like, ballroom that they have in hotels. And it was in the Radisson train station hotel, which is a really nice place. And everything about it is just fun, you know. I recommend it if anybody's in the area to see one, you know, if you see it advertised.
Oh, this one was at the Radisson this time?
Yes, it was. I don't know why. Oh. Nobody told me why, but it was at the train station. And that's just a really nice place. I almost went for the brunch that they have there. They have a nice, like, expensive brunch. I was going to go have a few mimosas, but I thought I'd get a little crazy after that, so I didn't.
That's actually where we had some of our pictures taken for our wedding, that, like, foyer area there with the fountain and all that jazz.
Yeah, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm glad to see them back at that hotel because I know in the past they were at the much smaller hotel on the outskirts of town, if you will.
Right.
But it's good to see them back into the big building, if you will.
And you know what the other thing nice about it is? It's downtown. Like, you're not that far from the mall that's down there. The cool thing with Dave Shop is, too, he was sending people, like, 2 blocks away if you needed stuff. Like, yeah, I don't have it here, but go over to the shop. So our retailer was, like, you know, was doing good with that. But, you know, I think, like you said, if you have a small list and looking for something, you could have found something you were looking for.
And I would be remiss to mention, I know Todd had mentioned the folks who were selling baked goods, among other things there. I picked up their little flyer at the shop, and if they're listening, they should have some sort of internet presence to show some of the pictures of their stuff. They're calling themselves the Fantastic Avengers, and Fantastic is spelled with a P-H, and Avengers is Avengers, E-V-A-N-G-ers. And they have a funnily themed named snack treats, I guess you could say. They have Sherlock scones, a thing of a cookie. But the one that cracked me up was the Howlett family beef jerky.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, it was just like when Wolverine would pop his claws and the skin that would break through, that's what they were making the jerky out of.
The best cupcake they had there for me, though, was a banana cupcake with vanilla frosting with sprinkles on the top with Pop Rocks. Laced into the icing, so it came
that sounds dangerous.
It does. I kept talking about Mikey from Life Cereal, and all the young people just started to look at me strange. Dave laughed, but he was the only one. He's old like me, so.
So, you know, it's always good to, you know, we talked last week with San Diego's coming up in 3 weeks. Heroes Con was last weekend in Charlotte, and Scranton was a smaller con, of course, nearby. So definitely, if there is a small con in your area to check it out. You can always find lots of cool stuff there.
Mm-hmm. I highly recommend it.
So we are going to dive into the weekly long box question from last week. And as always, you can follow, or you can follow the show on Twitter at Weekly Long Box. You can follow Todd at Roker the Joker, R-O-W-K-E-R, and myself at L.F. Chikarison. I had an angry day yesterday on Twitter, but, you know, I was angry for a good cause. And, you know, if you know what's up, you know what's up. And that's all I could say about that. But our question last week was, who is the creator, living or dead, that you would like to meet? And I was not surprised by some of the choices that we got, but it was quite the array and a very interesting story on a couple of them as well. You know, we had some folks, Dan Peck, longtime listener, HH2 News on Twitter, said Robert Kirkman. And that was the thing. I wrote down my choice initially right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And then I was almost swayed by a lot of other people's choices. You know, Dale A, who that is his Twitter handle with an underscore between the Dale and the A, mentioned Dan Slott. And I think Dan Slott would be someone I would love to shoot the breeze with in regards to comics. He's someone who, he seems like he's someone who loves his comic books, as do I. Kevin Hellions, who I got a chance to meet this past weekend in Syracuse, a real nice guy, wearing a fancy Decepticons jacket. He had mentioned Rich Johnson of the infamous Bleeding Cool website, and that would be someone who I'm sure has quite a few tales to tell.
Can only imagine.
Mike Schaefer, another longtime listener, mentioned Michael Turner, and actually specifically mentioned a story where he was at a local con. Michael Turner was back in 2008, which was very close to him, and he opted not. I think he said he opted not to go, and then Michael Turner sadly passed not too long after that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always heartbreaking when that happens. We did have a little bit, you know, and a couple people said, like, people like Mark Wade and Jason Aaron, and these are people that I've already met. Our local retailer, Dave Romeo, who is the Comics on the Green fella that we talk about all the time, he had mentioned Carl Barks, since he is a big Scrooge McDuck fan. Steve Ditko was a popular choice, as was Siegel and Schuster, among others. So mine is not very exciting. It's just more of who was my gut reaction of who the main creators of the day and age are that I have not met and would like to meet, and that would be Ed Brubaker. I would love to bend Brubaker's ear about, like, his time writing for DC and all the Batman stuff, Gotham Central, Criminal, where he gets his inspiration for a lot of stuff, which is always, like, the wonkiest question. But he does seem like he is, you know, follow him on the Twitter. He seems like he's a guy who has a really good sense of humor about himself.
Mm-hmm. He was one of them that was on my list. That's a cool choice. It's a really good choice. My choice I had trouble with because one day I'm just going to put down a list of the people that I've met, and it's ridiculous because we talked about it. Me and Dave, I've gone to at least two cons a year for like 19 years. I've been to San Diego. I've been to New York. So I've met a lot of creators. I've met Neil Gaiman, met Bill Sienkiewicz. I've met, you know, Neil Adams. I've met all the legends. I've met the newer ones. So this one was really hard. And then I thought about it. It's a name that you're probably not even going to know if I throw it out. I'm going to ask you if you know. But do you know an artist named Scott Shaw?
No, I don't actually.
Scott Shaw is the guy who created Captain Carrot and the Amazing Zoo Crew with Roy Thomas. And I've never met Scott Shaw. He pretty much only does like West Coast cons, and he was at the San Diego con when I was there, but I couldn't find him because it's so big. But the thing with Scott Shaw is he's done so much stuff, and I'm a Facebook fan of his, and just the stuff that he talks about. He was one of the 18 guys who created San Diego Comic-Con. He worked at like Hanna-Barbera and all these other cartoon companies. He worked on Muppet Babies. He worked on like Flintstone stuff. He worked on Fruity Pebbles commercials. And he's always talking about the insides of animation and comics. And obviously I'm a huge Captain Carrot fan, but also this would be a guy that every time I hear him talk, I want to hear more stories from him. There's like a billion things that I could ask him. And I mean, I know he's a really side creator, but it's just somebody that I always wanted to meet.
Wow, that is a much cooler choice than mine. Not a knock on my own choice, but yeah, that's a really cool choice.
Thanks.
So that wraps up last week's Twitter question, and now it is time for this week's Twitter question. When next week's show comes out, it will be on the 4th of July, so before you go and visit your family and enjoy some hamburgers and hot dogs on the grill, be sure to download the episode, because next week we will be talking, and I'm sure at length, since this is going to be quite the subjective topic, what is your book of the half year? As of next week's episode, we will be exactly halfway through 2012. Let us know what has been your favorite book that you have read that has come out so far in 2012.
This is going to be another interesting one for me. I've read a lot of books in the last 6 months.
Yes. I was, I actually filled out we didn't mention it in the news, but I'll mention it here. When the new 52 came out back in September, DC did a survey through Nielsen, I guess.
Okay.
An online survey. And they just did another one recently as well. And I did partake in it. And one of the things that they ask you is how many comics have you purchased so far this year? And luckily, I am very anal retentive, and I have a list of such a thing in three different spots in my life. And just this year alone, I have purchased over 400 comic books.
Wow. That's a lot of comic books.
That is a lot of comic books. Yes, sir.
I wonder how many I've purchased. I'm not as good as you at keeping track. I know you have your... I've only seen the Fabled notebook. I've never seen any of the other two places that you keep, that you store the information in triplicate.
Well, actually, I just sent you the list of the one today. I finally got Todd on board with StashMyComics.com. It's a really easy way for me to keep track of where all my books are, and it helps me remember where all my books are, being an anal retentive person. It's a free site. They're not a sponsor or anything, but definitely if you have a burgeoning, out-of-control comic book collection, this is a great way to keep track of it. And I had sent Todd the list of all of my comics, and I think I might, because it's public, and I think I might tweet it out just because I think that would be kind of nifty for people to kind of look and browse through what comic books I have. And actually, you know what? As I mention it, if you, the listeners, are on StashMyComics.com, post up to us and let us see your collection, because I would be very interested to see everyone else's collection as well.
Mm, that is cool. I would like to see that, too. And because he sent me the link to this comic site, I'm going to be, you know, organizing my books. So if people don't see me for the next 8 months, you know who to thank or who to blame. It is Leonard.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So put on your thinking caps, go back through the last 6 months, and let us know for next week what your favorite book of the last 6 months has been, and we will discuss and take it to a vote.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of a vote, I think I have an idea for next week's question as well.
Ooh.
But we'll get into that. I do want to, of course, thank you all for listening. Be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. I do see that we had a couple new ones since last week's episode. 5 stars or better if you're one of those people who can crack the code or jailbreak the iTunes system. Be sure to give us a star rating higher than 5. That makes us look super cool and fresh and won't get us banned for somehow breaking their system. And, Todd, was there anything else you wanted to mention before we wrap things up?
No, I'm good.
All right, this was Weekly Long Box, episode 32. I am Leonard, and for Todd, we do thank you for listening, and we will catch you all next week.